Hi, I'm Sarah Snyder, and welcome to The Art We Love, a podcast about art and the ways it affects our lives. This week, I'll be talking to Steven Snyder about the film 2001: A Space Odyssey. We've got another special episode this week. It's our first episode about film. But before we get to that, here's a quick word from our sponsors. First, we have Elm Coffee Roasters. Elm Coffee Roasters, open in Pioneer Square and SLU for takeout and soon indoor seating. Order coffee and more at elmcoffeeroasters.com. And The M. If you're looking for a place to live in the fall with student-friendly amenities, spectacular views, and that's walking distance to campus, check out The M Seattle. They are the only student living high-rise near UW, and they've recently dropped the rates on all their floor plans. Visit themseattle.com for more info. Well, all right. I have a special guest this week. It's my dad. Say hi, Dad.
Hello.
You're supposed to say hi, Dad, but you know what? I appreciate it. I appreciate the effort. And today we're going to be talking about a movie that's really special to both of us, 2001. So here's the million-dollar question, Dad. What is 2001: A Space Odyssey, and what is it, like, about?
It is a groundbreaking science fiction film that is about, it's about the biggest questions. It's a three-part movie. First part is about how before there were people back at the dawn of man, it's called the dawn mm-hmm. of man, how they learned to use tools. Mm-hmm. Then it goes to the near future where we find that something has been left for us to find in the future to see when we used our tools to leave the planet. And the third part is when we do leave, we go towards Jupiter, which is where the thing left on the moon was beaming a signal, and we find out what's there.
Yeah. That's about it. There is also a robot, and if you haven't seen the movie, that might not make sense, but it sure does.
Is it a robot? It's a computer.
I don't want to be doing this podcast anymore. Let's just sit here for the next hour and debate whether or not Hal is a robot. He doesn't have a body.
No, he doesn't.
No, okay, true. Anyways, so I love this movie. I was introduced to it by you. So I would like to ask you, before we get into everything, what is your favorite 2001 A Space Odyssey fun fact?
I see. You know, I think the most interesting one is that there actually is a deliberate joke embedded in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when, in the middle part, when Dr. Haywood Floyd is traveling to the moon to talk about this thing they found, and he's on the spaceship, it's a long journey, and he goes to the zero gravity toilet. And there is a long, long list of instructions on how to use the toilet. So he's standing there, biting his knuckle, waiting to use the bathroom. That's the joke in the movie. The one joke.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, 2001 has a reputation for being long and slow and difficult to watch. And it is all those things. I say that with love. But it's also it's also kind of funny sometimes. And I think we don't give it enough credit for that. My favorite fun fact about 2001 is, and I really tried to find, to double check that this is true before we sat down to record, but I couldn't find it in any of the books I have. And I found one thing saying it was true on the internet. So I'm not 100% on this, but I am pretty sure. As the story goes, before 2001 came out, Stanley Kubrick really wanted to take out an insurance policy on the film just in case alien life was discovered before it came out and it became unprofitable. And I think it was either the studio wouldn't let him or literally no companies would take him up on the offer, but he really did try.
That must have been interesting for Lloyd's of London to figure that one out.
I mean, maybe. So when did you first watch 2001? How did you hear about it? And what was the experience of watching it for the first time like?
Well, it came out in 1968. Mm-hmm. And that's the year I turned 12. So I was an 11-year-old boy sitting there watching it. I don't know how I heard about it. My parents just took us to a movie. I was very, very interested in the space program. So anything related to space, space travel was going to appeal to me. And I saw it on the big screen as a new film. I knew nothing about it. Didn't know what I was getting into.
I love that. That's great. Another one of my favorite things about 2001 is that it's rated G, because, you know, back in the olden days, they were like, kids will like this, right? Right. And I mean, there's nothing to make it not kid appropriate. Right. I find it difficult to imagine being interested in it as a kid. Were you bored at all?
Oh, no, I was not bored at all. I was sometimes a little overwhelmed by the sensory overload. But no, bored? No, definitely not. It's not a family movie, you know? But it is.
You can make it a family movie if you believe in it being a family movie.
That's true.
So, and I also want to ask this because I know we have both seen this movie a number of times. So I would like to ask, what has been your favorite 2001 A Space Odyssey viewing experience?
Well, you know, I mean, there were some that were really amazing. Seeing it with the symphony playing, the soundtrack was amazing. Seeing it in IMAX was amazing, but I think my favorite time seeing it was when I took you to see it on the big screen for the first time. You had seen it before, so it wasn't new for you, but it was first time on a big screen, and it was a late weeknight, late movie, and we're staying out late on a school night, and it got us so charged up and energized. We just chattered at each other the whole way home, and you gave me new ways to look. You called it an art film, which I'd never thought of before. It is kind of an art film. It was a good time.
Yeah. I like to think of little 15-year-old Sarah being like, it's an art film. My favorite was the IMAX. I wrote a paper for my high school diploma on 2001 and the music of 2001, and I happened to be doing this during 2018 when the film turned 50, so it was playing everywhere. And so we decided to see it as many times as we could and take advantage of that fact. We saw it about four times that year, and my favorite was seeing it in IMAX because the movie is such an overwhelming movie, and that just made it so much worse. So what do you love about 2001? What makes this film special to you and special to the sort of greater science fiction classic film canon?
Well, it's special in filmmaking because it was a real break from the science fiction of the 1950s with Forbidden Planet, and The Day the Earth Stood Still, and things like that. It was Kubrick's goal was to make a realistic science fiction film, and I loved that about it. It was the most realistic film about space travel that I've ever seen. Of course, we had not even been to the moon yet when I saw it, so you know, it's like it wasn't like this is what space travel is like, but this is probably what it's going to be like, and I thought that was just so cool.
Yeah, I think one of the strongest things about the film, and I'm going to try not to get too into this because this isn't a film analysis podcast, but I have a lot of thoughts all the time. It's not a dated film. It still seems very futuristic, even though we're well past 2001 by now. So before we get into this next part, here is a quick word from our sponsors again, Elm Coffee Roasters. Open since 2015, Elm Coffee Roasters is devoted to high-quality coffee that's easy to brew at home and a joy to drink. At our roastery and cafe in Pioneer Square, Seattle, Elm obsessively roasts small batches of coffee that they source with a focus on sustainable practices that lift up the whole supply chain and protect the future of the coffee plant. Elm's goal is to make a truly exceptional cup of coffee, an experience that you look forward to every day. Cafes in Pioneer Square and SLU open now for takeout and soon dine-in service. Please use code PODCAST at elmcoffeeroasters.com for 15% off your next coffee order. So jumping back into it, how has this film changed you? Has it changed the way you see the world? And if so, how so?
That's a good question. It got me thinking a lot about where we come from as a species, and more than that, about where we might be going, what's the next step in evolution, which is one of the subtexts, I think, in the movie. It was my introduction to science fiction, so it turned me on to a whole new genre of film and literature.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur C. Clarke was one of my favorite science fiction authors, and he wrote that with Kubrick. And it like I said, it changed science fiction filmmaking. So that was changed for me too. What might change my expectations of what to see and things like that. But it was that question of, are we alone? Is someone else must be out there? Will we see them? What's it going to be like? Who are we? Who will we be? I love that stuff.
Yeah. I know you're a film person. Were you interested in film before this movie, or maybe did you not get interested to it after this movie?
No, I was obsessed with this movie. So I read everything I could get my hands on, how the movie was made, how it was written, the process, things like that. But in terms of filmmaking in general, no, it didn't get me interested in that, really. That didn't happen until college.
Gotcha. That's a story for another podcast episode. Do you believe in aliens?
Wow. Yeah, you know, that leads to the big paradox. I feel like we're finding extrasolar planets as fast as we can look for them. It seems like there's water. When I was a kid, when we find water, we'll find life. There's water everywhere. But how come we haven't found them yet? How come they haven't found us? That's sort of the paradox. I get the feeling there is lots of life elsewhere in the universe. Why we are so isolated, maybe just because the distances are so great, I don't know. It's a paradox.
Yeah, it makes me sad to think about distance and isolation in space. Personally, I don't like believe in aliens in the like conspiracy theorist science fiction sense. I more believe in aliens in the sense that like I think there's life out there because it's improbable that there like isn't life out there, but I don't know for certain that it'll be intelligent life or life that's intelligent or alive in any way that we can recognize, because we're humans and we like to anthropomorphize everything.
That's a good point. There's a big question is, what will life look like? Would we even recognize it if we found it, if it doesn't look like us?
Yeah. Astrobiology is a really interesting subject. I recommend everyone look into it. Pause this podcast and go read about astrobiology and then come back. 2001, I also want to say, just on a personal note, I can't remember the first time I watched 2001. It's just sort of been this thing that's always been in my life. I woke up one day and suddenly I knew the plot of 2001, A Space Odyssey. But it sort of changed the way I see the world, in that it was the first movie that I kind of put effort into studying, if that makes sense. It's the first movie that made me think about like filmmaking and how it works, and like, oh, how did they do this? How did they do that? And even more than that, like, oh, why was this choice made? Why does this look like this? Why is no one talking right now? Why is it so quiet? Why is that man hitting that other man with a stick? You know, normal questions like that. So it's, you know, it's a film.
Can I tell a little story about my first viewing?
Go for it.
In the beginning, when they have these two tribes of these apes who are, they're battling over a water hole, and one of them learns to use a bone as a tool, which is the message of that first part of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I got confused about which tribe was which, and I thought that it was the aggressive apes who end up keeping the water hole. And I thought, were they descended from the bad guys? And I was like, that bothered me as an 11-year-old. I had to like figure that out. Well, oh no, we're the good guys. Okay, Moonwatch was a good guy. We're all right.
I feel like that would have been a really interesting direction for Kubrick to take, though. Uh-huh. I think it would have made for a really different film, but it would have made for a very interesting film, certainly. Yeah, and I think that really gets to something that I think about. I talked about this on our last episode, but I feel it with this movie, is that a cool thing about art and how it changes you is that when you return to it, it doesn't change. The media object itself does not change, but you change, and you can sort of, you bring your new ideas and new opinions to this
text.
You
see things differently.
Yeah, exactly. So I think 2001 is one of those movies where I can come back to it and be like, oh, this is, I have a new appreciation for
You'll
this.
You'll get something different out of it.
Yeah, it's exactly. Really isn't that fun? So do you have a favorite scene or moment from the film?
I think there's a couple conversations that happen. The film is not a very dynamic film.
It's not.
There's a couple different conversations that I really liked in the movie. The conversations are full of tension, though they're not tense conversations. The briefing on the moon, when Dr. Floyd gets to the moon and he talks to his colleagues about what we found, the cover story, and things like that. it's kind of a dystopian vision they're planning there. They have found evidence of intelligent alien visitation, and they've decided they're not going to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How long is this cover story going to last? Well, I don't know, Bill. It could be a long time. And that's kind of, I found that kind of chilling, even though it's sort of like just a very sort of side thing in the film that I don't really dwell on.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene, it's also really interestingly staged, and it's very disorienting because you have these like shots of like the expansive space, and then when you transition to that moon base where they're talking about, they're doing their sort of quasi press conference on alien life, you can't see anything. It's just like a room underground, and it's really like, ooh.
Yeah, there's lots of windows, but there's nothing but bright light. Yeah, it's white outside.
It's spooky.
The conversation on the space station where he meets the Russian scientist, and they say, I hear there's an epidemic happening at one of your bases. We should know. Yeah, I'm really sorry. I can't talk to you about that. It kind of feels like today, too. There's an epidemic. We need to know the information. Well, I'm sorry.
Well, no. Yeah. I did rewatch 2001 at the start of the at the very start of the pandemic, but it would be interesting to revisit it because, I think its themes of isolation... Just isolation might hit a little bit different.
Space travel in general involves a lot of isolation. I think that was one of Kubrick's messages in the latter part of the film. It's a solo experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's melancholy.
Yeah, it is melancholy. My favorite moment in the film is, and spoiler alert for 2001: A Space Odyssey, but in the third part of the film, right before Hal goes to kill Frank Poole, there's the shot of the the pod turns. It turns on its own, and there's a shot of it turning on its own, and then there's a shot of it coming towards the camera, and then there's a series of sharp cuts, sort of encroaching, each one is successively a little bit closer on a Hal, and I think a lesser director might have put like either a lesser director or a director who wasn't as confident in the power of the moment would have put like a loud sound cue, like a jump scare noise right behind it to like really hit home, but it's utterly silent, and you just it's no less terrifying. And it shows like, I think it's a really good encapsulation of like how that movie really handles tone, and
it is weird. Yeah. It is weirdly silent because during that whole scene where Poole is outside of Discovery, all you hear is his breathing.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much going on in the soundtrack then anyway. And then you see him outside and the pod starts coming towards him, and that's just not even just silent.
Yeah. It's the sound design of that film is crazy. And one more thing before we leave, speaking of sound design, I have a lot of love for this film's soundtrack. So I would like to know, what is your favorite piece of music on the score?
Well, I'm going to give the easy answer first, which is the one that everybody's familiar with and everybody likes to play, and that's also Sprach Zarathustra, that little short little 1 minute.
That piece. Short little ditty.
Dun, dun. But I think, actually, I like the Guyan, Guyan Adagio they mm-hmm. play. I think when they're on Discovery, when you first see it on Discovery, and it's a melancholy piece of music, and it's just Kubrick wanted to use that scene to show the audience space travel is boring, and he wanted to have the piece lasts what, 11 minutes, something like that. He wanted to have the whole 11 minutes play out, just showing life aboard Discovery with two astronauts who barely ever speak to each other, just doing their own thing. He cut it, I think, in half, but still, you get a strong sense of the melancholy of it all, and it's a beautiful piece of music.
Yeah, I think Kubrick overshot space travel as lonely and melancholy, and reached space travel as strangely beautiful. My favorite track is also the Guyan, but I think also Ligeti's Requiem for soprano, mezzo soprano, two symphonies, etc. The one that's used over the monolith scenes, because it's just so crazy. I think Ligeti is a really cool composer. His music comes up in a couple of other Kubrick films, notably Eyes Wide Shut and The Shining. And if you listen to the music in this movie and think, huh, that's wild, I'd like to hear more of that, I highly recommend you look into his work because he's very interesting. Well, This has been Sarah and Steven. Thank you for talking to me today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I mean, I it's not like I had you. This is also your house.
Thanks for inviting me into your studio.
Thank you. My parents' basement. All right, everybody. Have a good rest of your week. And take a moment out of your time to ponder the vast and incredible loneliness of space. Bye. Thank you for listening to The Art We Love. The music in this episode was by Blue Dot Sessions. If you would like to come on the show and talk about a piece of art you love, please send an email to theartwelovepodcast@gmail.com from your UW email address with the art you'd like to discuss. Again, that's theartwelovepodcast@gmail.com. And again, please send from your UW address with the piece of art you'd like to discuss. Bye for now.